Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Continuing my fascination with ABBA, 50 years since they won the Eurovision Song Contest, and today with Rod Steven from Bjorn Again.
I'd liken it to Spinal Tap meets ABBA. It was a mixed reaction. It was either really good or really bad. And I thought, that's good, I think. Because it was almost like we just came down in a spaceship and just landed, and we were this thing that people had never really seen before. Bjorn would have this great big white telephone, and he'd be ringing up Benny's on the other side of the stage, and they're having this phone conversation with each other in the middle of the song. We will never be as good as ABBA. I'm going to end up in cement shoes for telling you this story.
Some of the stories that Rod Steven tells me in this interview are just fabulous. Do you know they were nearly called Benny There, Done That? Well, they ended up as Bjorn Again, and we've been hearing from Rod in just a second. Just time to ask you to subscribe. It helps me, and it allows you to hear when I post something new on the channel. Okay, let's get on with it with Rod Steven and Bjorn Again. Rod Steven, welcome. The creator and founder of Bjorn Again. First of all, do you remember what you were doing on the 6th of April 1974, the day that ABBA won Eurovision with Waterloo?
Well, the thing is, I was in Australia at the time. Eurovision Song Contest wasn't quite the same as what it is in the UK, of course, or in Europe. And so we were aware of it. We knew it was happening, and it did get televised, not live, I don't think. It was the day after or something like that. So the highlights of the show, let's say. But certainly we became aware that ABBA were the victors and knocked off Olivia Newton-John, who was singing, representing England, I think.
Yeah, Long Live Love, I think it was. God, yeah. Why do I remember that? were you brought up in Melbourne, in Australia? So what was it like for a young person being brought up in Melbourne? What was there to do?
Well, it was, I was always playing football and cricket in the street with all the kids in the street when you're younger. And then, as you get into secondary school, join the local football team and the cricket team, and that was about it. But I must admit, I got shirt-fronted in a football match once, and basically it was a guy who was much bigger and taller than me that ran into me front on and almost knocked me out, and I was lying in the mud and got carried off the field, and I lost my nerve with playing football, and I'd been dabbling with a bit of music, and then I started hooking up with friends of mine that were into music as well. Our thing was progressive rock music, English progressive rock music. Definitely the kind of thing we're listening to most of the time. Genesis, yes. Gentle Giant. All these bands from England we could never get to see live. We love them. So we'd sit around listening to that. We only really heard about ABBA just when the radio was on in the background or if there were TV programs on, such as Countdown, which was our weekly, a bit like Top of the Pops.
With Molly Meldrum.
Molly Meldrum, yes, of course. Who, now this is an interesting aside, was responsible for the success of ABBA.
Absolutely. Now,
you're aware of this story?
Tell the audience.
Well, in essence, what happened was he was supposed to play on his radio show, SOS. That's what the record company wanted to promote. Molly Meldrum instead chose the B-side. The B-side on that record was Mamma Mia. He much preferred that song. And the record company were, you know, having problems with that. You know, come on, you've got to play SOS. That's the song we're pushing. And so the Australians loved Mamma Mia. It went to number one in the charts. And on the back of that, they decided to release Mamma Mia over in the UK. And of course, then it went through the roof. And that was pretty much what propelled ABBA to superstardom. Of course, winning Eurovision was a massive coup with Waterloo, but this really secured for them worldwide that they were a force to be reckoned with.
After you had this accident, let's call it football, and you got into music, how did your family view creativity? Were they supportive, or did they view it like most families in that era, because it's not something that is seen as something where you can make money, you know?
Sure enough, yeah. It was something that I guess I've discovered myself, but I suppose in my formative years, I was, you know, there was always a musical instrument around. And, you know, I tried this and that recorder. You know, we even had a small Glockenspiel. I just wasn't that interested. Music at school, it was fascinating, the theory and so forth. I couldn't really get a grasp on it, though, although it was fascinating. But what was more fascinating was that my music teacher knew Keith Emerson from Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And I think they were related or something. And we thought that was the best thing ever. And that was yet another thing that got me excited about music. But a friend of mine had an acoustic guitar and I started playing that. I somehow knew how to play the guitar even without being taught or anything like that. I used to dream about playing the guitar. I could, in my dreams, I was playing scales on the guitar. And when I picked up the guitar, I could play it. That was very bizarre. And straight away, I was listening to the radio and picking up on riffs from all the popular bands, mainly Australian bands. This is pre the ABBA era. But I got more and more into music as we went along. But it was always ABBA that was in the background for me throughout the 70s and, of course, going into the 80s.
So but, tell me about TV, because I think another, you know, I don't know whether this is completely random and I'm making this up, but when I was sort of researching for this, I was thinking about when I was young and I was a massive fan of the Muppets and, of course, the Swedish Chef.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I wonder whether the Swedish Chef had also some sort of impact. It was in the back of your head all the time.
Possibly. It may have been a whole bunch of things that... anything Swedish was kind of interesting and of course remote, you know, what kind of people are they really? You know, the language was different. There was a fascination with anything from Europe, let's say, or Scandinavia. We weren't exposed to that much of it in Australia. So there was just this kind of remote fascination with it.
You said you were into things like Emerson, Lake and Palmer because of your teacher's, you know, relationship, but you were into very different music than ABBA. So did you initially think ABBA were naff, or did you actually like them
initially? when it was in the background and, you know, on the Sunday night countdown program, Molly Meldrum's program, you'd see the film clips and I would think to myself, they're basically, they're poppy three chord songs where they repeat the lyrics a lot. Ring, ring, you know, Mamma Mia, da 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 da, money, money, money. Other examples I'm trying to think of, honey, honey. You know, it seemed like, is that what the go is with Swedish music? They just repeat the lyric and really drive that home. But, you know, when you compare it to an album like The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, which of course is a totally different type of musical experience, and Tubular Bells, for example, I didn't really relate to ABBA that well back in the early days. But having been in a succession of unsuccessful original bands and cover bands in the 80s, I pondered over what would be popular, what would people like to see and hear in a pub in Melbourne. And of course, there's a lot of great Australian music, which most of the cover bands were playing anyway. And the logical progression, as I see it, was that music from yesteryear, which you would not hear of anymore. In fact, when ABBA finished up in 82, 83, that was kind of it. There was no more ABBA played in the radio, nor shown on TV. I'm sure the same thing in the UK. It was as though they had completely disappeared, as well as the fashion from the 70s, of course. In the 80s, everyone was trying to dress up like Spandau Ballet or Duran Duran and listening to that kind of music. And the whole of the 70s thing just got shifted to one side. So in 88, that's when I thought, wouldn't it be great to revisit this music? And so definitely I thought ABBA would be the focus because there were so many songs that we all knew, we'd all heard. Some of the songs I thought were really rocky as well. Does Your Mother Know was a really rocky number. And I thought, well, that's okay. We could do stuff like that. But it was perhaps most importantly, I think, the name Bjorn Again, which oddly, when I was skiing with friends in the Highlands in Victoria, I made up all these names. So silly names like Hands Down to Blouse and Benny There Done That. And I thought, Bjorn Again, that'll be my name. You know, so we'd sing out to each other whilst we're skiing along, trying to impress girls and stuff, which I'm sure it didn't, but you know, with these Scandinavian names. So the name Bjorn Again was there. And when I thought to do the band Bjorn Again, I thought that'd be the perfect name for it, surely. And so it stuck straight away. And we just carried on from that moment onwards.
How did your friends react? Because it is, you know, I mean, it was such an original idea back then. And in retrospect, it's an incredibly clever idea. But if I'm at that moment in time, I'm going to think you're nuts. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. You're totally right, Steve. I got that reaction from, so I canvassed opinions from all my friends and family, and it was a mixed reaction. It was either really good or really bad. And I thought, that's good, I think. So to have such a negative reaction from some people, like, are you crazy? No one cares about ABBA. No one would be interested at all. Or, yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah, I'd go and see that. But nothing really in between. It was one extreme or the other. So that also made me think, this is a good idea. And so we stuck with it.
So did you sit down then? You know, like TV shows have what they call Bibles, where they, you know, identify the structure of the TV show and they look at what goes where, and over a series, you know, that's why a series always looks similar on a TV show, like a cooking show or something like that. And they create something which is the rules of the show. Did you create something which was the rules of the band, or did that just sort of come into being as you were starting?
I think the initial part of it was we will never be as good as ABBA. Can't be. They are top of the game. That songwriting, performance, production in the studio, everything amazing. That we can't match that. So let's try and do something that's a bit removed from it. And so with that, we chose to kind of go down the avenue of being a pastiche, really, a bit of a satire of what ABBA was, and developed a story around Bjorn Again as to why we existed. But also for the show, we, of course, spoke in our Swenglish accents, which are kind of half Swedish, half English, but rock the show up even more, using Does Your Mother Know as a good example, to give most of the songs that kind of rock and roll attitude. So it had a guitar edge to it. And we were like, in terms of comedy, there was quite a lot of comedy on stage as well. For example, the song Ring Ring. We don't just play Ring Ring. We have a breakdown section in the song where there'd be a telephone ringing sound over the PA. And Bjorn would have this great big white telephone, and he'd be ringing up Benny's on the other side of the stage. And they're having this phone conversation with each other in the middle of the song. And we'd talk about something topical, you know, which politician was done for doing this, or, you know, some other kind of issue. And it was really funny. So I think that was kind of the hallmark of Bjorn Again, that we could get that ABBA formula and sort of make it our own in that regard. And there's other examples throughout the show where we do the similar kind of thing. Well, I'll give you a good example. It's SOS, a great ABBA song, fantastic song, and we all love SOS. But I liked the way I got Message in a Bottle by the Police, and the end of that song, sending out an SOS, that married it into the end of SOS by ABBA. And we still do that to the day, and it goes over really well. And the audience are kind of like, what? You know, we're listening to the Police now. What's going on? Almost as if to say we're celebrating not just ABBA's music, but other music from various eras, and in a Bjorn Again style.
I mean, what I like about what you're saying about the sort of interpretation and the arrangements you had to do is that you clearly had to look into ABBA's music in a way that really specifically understood the talent that went into making it. So it must have made you see their music differently, because I think a lot of us today, and I was one in, you know, in the 70s up to the early 80s, it's a bit on the back burner where I thought, oh yeah, quite like it, but I shouldn't like it and all that sort of stuff. And now today I sort of appreciate it in a different way.
That's right, yeah. Well, you're right. In order to understand the songs and the music, it had to be deconstructed. And, you know, that was a tricky part, trying to figure out what the heck do we do with this, because they used so much studio wizardry, ABBA, and brilliantly, I might add as well, when you really analyze what they did in the studio, it's just quite unbelievable. What they were trying to achieve was that same kind of Beach Boys effect, that wall of sound, the Phil Spector wall of sound, which Michael Tretow, the engineer, producer, targeted, and what Benny and Bjorn wanted. So they would layer not only the vocals, which was just unbelievable, but musically as well. So much trickery going on in the studio. And how the heck do we do that live? So with pulling it all apart, putting it back together, the fundament was, let's bring it back down to a basic rock and roll band lineup. So drums, bass, guitar, keyboards, and plonk the vocals on top of that. But also at the time, we're using some old equipment. So we had early sequences and stuff, we could run sequences with the songs, and we could put in percussion, tambourine, shaker, strings, other bits and pieces. So we did have a bit of help. So it's a bit like a seventh musician on stage. But I would say it's like a rock and roll version of ABBA, more rock and roll, but also in terms of the humor, I'd liken it to Spinal Tap meets ABBA. Certainly that's what Bjornigan is about.
Can you remember the first gig? Because there must have been such trepidation. I imagine you were sort of shitting yourself going on stage with this idea where you're not really sure what the reaction is going to be. And you probably got all your mates in the audience to start with. And I just wondered how that performance was, and critically how you viewed it afterwards and what you understood what you had to do from that first performance.
Yeah, Steve, you're totally right. It was a lot of trepidation for the first show. In fact, we did delay the first show because we thought we're not ready for this. So it got put back by a month or so. There's so much to get ready for the show. Costumes, choreography. We had to, you know, in essence, ABBA didn't dance. You look at any ABBA film clip, video clip, and there's no choreography. There's no dancing. So we kind of thought, well, we've got to have some dancing going. We can't stand stock still on stage. So the girls do a lot of choreography. So we did delay the first show by quite a while. And I have to say, so this is how it was advertised. There was a blackboard at the front of this venue in Collingwood, in inner suburban Melbourne. Very small pub that holds 300 people at tops. And it was flying it up the flagpole, really. Is this going to work, or you know, are people just going to not show up? We didn't really know. And we just let it happen. And on the day, this room was jam-packed. And they couldn't fit any more people in. There were people out the front milling around and couldn't get in. There was about 300 or 400 people there for sure. And it went over so well because it was almost like we just came down in a spaceship and just landed, and we were this thing that people had never really seen before. And you're right, it was so far left field. No one would dream of doing ABBA music. No pub band would dress up like ABBA and play the songs. And it turned out to be the perfect formula. And I think probably overarching would be that the name was really well received. Everyone just laughed at the name for a start. So we're off to a good start there. With the first show being so successful and the venue owner, the pub, the bar owner, selling so much alcohol. He was so happy, you know. So that was a good thing. Everyone was pretty much drunk, including all of our work friends that came down. You're right. There's a lot of friends that came down from work. And so we decided to put on another show 2 weeks later, and the same thing happened again. And you could draw a steep curve going up to the end of 1989 when we were on TV in Australia a lot, and we're touring around the whole country, and we pretty much became a household name within a year.
How did it turn international?
Yes, that was by virtue of a connected person. She was a woman who from Sweden who came to a show in Melbourne, and she really enjoyed the show. And she said, look, I've got a friend of mine that is a promoter out in Sweden. You should contact this person and, you know, he'll no doubt put some shows on for you. We thought this would be a great idea. So in 1990, it all connected and we went to Sweden and we had something like 12 dates, I think, all around the country, which... The best part of that, I'd have to say, was almost the day we landed. I think it was after the first gig, maybe. probably after the first gig, there's a huge newspaper article in their evening paper, front page news. How dare they? You know, how dare this bunch of Australians and do the Coles to Newcastle thing and come over and play our music to us? How dare they? And that hit the right, classic, isn't it? That hit the right chord. Every show on that tour was sold out, and it was mainly, I would say, people about 19, 20 years old. They're like university students mainly. There weren't many older people there, but they liked the subversive element of what we were doing. And so we're fascinated by it. And every show we walked in, and sure enough, there's 2,000 young people who knew the music and their cultural icons, of course. And here we were doing our thing, sending them up in a way. It went over really well. But I'll just skip forward a little bit. And that is where Benny and Bjorn, they got wind of this. And the tour manager got a phone call, and he said, so tomorrow we've got to go to Stockholm. Benny and Bjorn want us to drop in and say hello. And so that's what we did. And we thought, what's going to happen here? You know, we're going to be lynched or some kind of thing like that.
More with Rod Steven from Bjorn Again coming up. He's got some fabulous stories to tell in this second half, but just time for me to ask you, please, to subscribe. It helps me, and it allows you to hear when I post something new on the website. So sit back and enjoy some more fabulous stories from Rod Steven of Bjorn Again.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay. Was this in their studio in Stockholm?
Polar Studios.
So what did they say?
You've been there, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I've interviewed them years ago in 94, I think it was.
Oh, yes.
And the thing is, what did they actually then say to you about Bjorn Again?
Well, they're fascinated by, you know, what we were doing. We pretty much conquered Australia and now Sweden. And they couldn't quite believe it. They said, but surely they were convinced that their music was finished. Verbatim, that's pretty much what they said. They'd released a best of album on vinyl in 1988, and it went to number 70, I think, on the UK charts and fell out after a few weeks. That was the sign for them that that was finished. So, they'd moved on to other things, Chess, Christina musicals, and Benny on that meeting that day said, right, come with me into the studio, the recording studio, which is next to their office there. And he said, I want to play some music. It's the new kind of ABBA that we're doing, the band called Gemini, and who had a limited success. But sure enough, the music sounded very ABBA. And so... And I, you know, of course, I said, that's great. Sounds amazing, Benny. It's really good. But, you know, of course, our remit is doing the ABBA hits, you know. And so to fast forward on that, we were invited back in 92 to go out and they said, can you come out and promote? We're going to release our music on CD, first time ever. And we want to test market the music in Sweden. So it's a CD and we're calling it ABBA Gold. We just want to see how it goes. And can you come on live TV and play a few songs and be part of the promotional swing? Yes, of course we can. We did that. And they had little faith in ABBA Gold. They just didn't know. So they did a bit of a sample in Sweden to see how it got along. And we all know what happened to ABBA Gold as a result of that CD being released. It's still in the charts today.
And there's a YouTube clip, which is where you're performing for Agneta. And it said an anniversary show for one of the Swedish TV channels. And
oh, yes.
And she's dancing and having fun, seeing herself, as it were, a parody of herself on stage. How did she react?
Well, it's, everyone would say that she was a recluse. She didn't talk to anyone, very shy, and the whole works. Well, I've got to tell you, she is totally the opposite to that. Because when I learnt the idea, that was a corporate show for this TV station. The CEO of TV3, I think it was, he was in a relationship with Agneta at the time. So as a surprise for her, he got Bjorn again to come in and do the show. She didn't really know about it before. And I didn't know that she was going to be there. It was all hush hush. But the event organizer told me out in the corridor before the show, she said, Agneta's here tonight, by the way. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? No, she's not. Yes, she is. You know, come over here. We've got this curtain. There she is over there. And I said, well, tell her to come back and say hello. And she said, okay. And I was on the phone. I was out in the green room. I was on the phone to someone, I remember, and I was chatting away, and I was aware of this person standing next to me, and I looked up, and it was Agneta. And I just said, I better go, see you. And then we just chatted for half an hour. She was talking about everything, and I was trying to remember everything, but I still can't. But in essence, she'd heard about Bjorn again. She was really looking forward to the show. And so I'll skip forward to we did the show. And then afterwards, she came back again and was chatting even more and wanted photographs and stuff. And, you know, she was completely the opposite to what I thought she would be. She was so friendly and eloquent as well. She spoke so well in English. I thought maybe she might be shy because she might not speak so much in English, but she's very intelligent and wow. When I was a teenager and not so much into ABBA, I did recognize that. I thought, wow, Agneta and Frida are pretty nice looking, you know. As an older person as I am today, and this, I think this goes back 10 years, doesn't it? Something we saw in Yetta. But wow, she is a very attractive person in many regards. You're beautiful and, really nice to chat to.
So she doesn't speak Swenglish. She speaks English, does she?
I think she kind of does, yeah.
What do you think Bjorn again has? This is a tough one. What do you think Bjorn again has that ABBA hasn't?
I don't know. Some kind of maybe a weird kind of less tangible element, which is, that we can be this strange kind of parody satire, but not too much, you know, to a degree, and get away with it. I don't quite know how that happens because in theory it shouldn't happen. I don't know, but I think I think actually, Steve, if I'm honest, one of the things that gets said to me a lot is that they love the name. Even Bjorn has said it himself. He loves the name Bjorn again. It's just it rolls off the tongue really well, and kind of, it's a bit like as it's printed on the tin. You know what you're going to get with Bjorn again. Somehow, I don't quite know how. I don't know really how Bjorn again got to the level it has done in so many different countries, but I guess it's a guilty pleasure, that you got the ABBA music and people are enjoying that, and they just enjoy Bjorn again's treatment.
Because you're a parody, I think sometimes your musical ability is a bit undervalued. Do you know what I mean? Like people go and they see the parody and they're singing along and they're enjoying it for that aspect. Do you feel that sometimes people overlook the musical ability you actually need to do something like this?
Steve, I think you're right. Yeah, it's there's been a lot, not a lot of comments. I've heard quite a few comments about people saying, well, this is back in the earlier days, I would say, all you're doing is just you're copying someone else's music. What that's artistically, it doesn't amount to much. But no, there's been a lot of thought put into arrangements of the songs, and musically, vocally, it is challenging stuff. And in my earlier days, I thought, it was throwaway poppy music, three chord music, but it's really involved, and you need to have your chops in order to play these songs.
Now, some of the weirder stories are the people that you've played for. Vladimir Putin, is that true?
Oh God.
If you are enjoying this interview and you have, like me, a bit of a fascination with ABBA, 50 years since Eurovision, I've actually uploaded so many different aspects of the ABBA story, from a modern band who plays ABBA-type music to this one, Bjorn again, to ABBA Mania. There's an interview with Carl Magnus Palm, the historian of ABBA, telling us the whole story of ABBA and Eurovision. And there's a really interesting podcast with Jana Schaffer. Jana Schaffer was a guitarist. I don't know, something like 50 of ABBA's tracks featured him. So he tells the inside story of working with Benny and Björn.
One day in the office, in the old office in Queen's Park, I thought it was one of my, I thought it was one of the guys in the band sending me up, hello, this is the Kremlin, we want the your ABBA show for our premiere, and I was like, what? So what are you saying? It was very odd. I thought this is strange. Anyway, that phone call ended, and then half an hour later, another phone call. It's the Kremlin again. We've been instructed to get your band to come and play for our. I think it was the premier then. He wasn't prime minister or whatever. Not sure of that. It turned out to be the Kremlin inquiring about Bjorn again, coming to do a show at Lake Valdai, which is where Vladimir Putin lives, and it's this fortress castle kind of thing, which is between St. Petersburg and Moscow. And so I put it onto this sounds rather intriguing, but a Russian agent. We've done some shows through this Russian agent before, and through Paul Franklin, my agent here in the UK, and they joined up forces, and actually, it all happened. It all got organized, and I sent a team out. I didn't go on this trip, but we went out there. They went out there, and within the compound of this fortress in Lake Valdai. This is a small theatre. And this stage had a, as the guys told me, like a veil over the front of the stage, so you couldn't really clearly see through it. They could see the band, but we couldn't really see out that well. Although Aileen told me, Aileen went out to do the show, she said clearly she saw Vladimir Putin and eight other guys in black suits standing in a line, and there was some woman. And the speculation was, who was that woman? Was it the wife of Vladimir Putin? Or was it, I think it's a Russian gymnast that, I'm going to end up in cement shoes for telling you this story. I'll be in the Thames later on tonight.
She's going to drink tea.
Yeah. But yeah. Shall I leave it at
leave it at that, because I mean, I did read also that the press spokesperson Dmitry Peskov denied that Putin had even been at the concert.
Oh yeah.
Which I think is brilliant. So yeah. let's move on. Something closer to home, because you are in London at the moment, is sure, obviously yeah. the Queen in 2012 at Buckingham Palace. Did she dance?
Well, I did ask her, but she, because bizarrely, we did our sound check, had dinner, it was all lovely, and we were ready to do our concert for what was to be the royal family, not the whole of the royal family. There was certain members there that weren't there. Noticeably, King Charles was not there, and Prince William, but there were a lot of royals there, including the Queen and Prince Philip. And then we're asked if we wanted to be in the lineup to meet these members of the royal family and the princesses Eugenie and Beatrice. And okay, that sounds great. So we went down, and it was in that long corridor. Do they call it the state room? I'm not sure what they call it, but it's a classic corridor where the royal family or the Queen, moreover, met to all sorts of people. So there we were, and she came up and we did the ma'am, you know, mom kind of thing. I can't remember what it was now. We had to get that right. We were so worried about that. And so we had a chat with her, da-da-da-da. Then she went off, and that was it. And then she came back, and she said, "What time is your concert tonight?" And it was one of those, "Ma'am, 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock, are you going to see the concert?" And she said, "No, I'll be tucked up in bed by then, I'm afraid. I've got a meeting on in the morning." And sure enough, the following morning, she was on the news. I could see she was meeting some dignitary or whatever. So so the story was correct. But that was so strange to, you know. I've got to tell you, it's I don't know if you've been to Madame Tussauds in town, but when you go in and you look around at the royal family wax lookalikes, it's the opposite to that. That when you meet the Queen and the royal family, we were standing stock still, and they were walking around us, looking at us in our ABBA costumes. It was so bizarre.
I mean, it's completely surreal moment, I think. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I mean, when did this become a sort of franchise? Because you're in London and you've got John, is his name Tyrell? I said that right? Yeah, who's in Australia. So when did that actually start to become a franchise?
I guess in 1997, if I got that right, the demand was just getting greater and greater. And so, of course, you need good quality depths who can come in and play piano for that show when that guy's unavailable, perhaps, or, you know. And we had simultaneous shows going on. At one point, I think the record was, if you call it a record, I think there were six shows on the one day. And, you know, like a band in Canada, one in America, one in Australia, you can imagine. and it was getting crazy. It was all down to demand, really. We just went with the supply demand kind of thing. And but it's not quite as busy as what it was back then. That was a crazy period, but 97 through to 2007, I would say.
But what do you think about the other ABBA cover bands? Because there are a few around the world. How do you think they rate in comparison to you?
Well, it's interesting because I see them as real ABBA tributes, whereas Bjorn Against Something, we're in like a bit of a subset that's slightly away from tribute land, but you know. Some of them are very good. Some are, but I think moreover, the majority of ABBA tributes are trying to be exactly ABBA. And I kind of don't understand that because it's not the same kind of mode as what Bjørnegen is in. You know, we're trying to be our own kind of thing in a way. But there's some good and bad. There's some classic bad ones, and I understand that people go along specifically to see. I'm not going to say all of them, but some bad ABBA tributes and other tributes as well, just to have a laugh because you still got the music coming at you, so you're having a laugh at it and enjoying the music. So in a way, I kind of understand that, but. There certainly are some good ABBA tributes out there, for sure.
I mean, there's no greater really accolade, I would think, than actually playing, I think it's three times at Glastonbury. I mean, you know, where you're amongst your peers in music around the world, you know, it's a massive event and it's such a high standard event. And there you are at Glastonbury. Could you ever imagine when you started out that you'd be playing at Glastonbury, and what was it like?
Oh, wow. At Glastonbury, you know, I did ask Emily and Michael Eavis, you know, why, you know, what's going on? That's a lot of trust you're putting in a little Australian ABBA tribute band to, you know, come out and open on the pyramid stage. And they're always saying things like, but you go over so well. And to get the party started, it's almost like we just the right fit to kick things off. It's in the right spirit. Everyone has fun with it. Everyone knows the music, so I guess it's we're reliable in that regard. Not to say we're as big and better than Storms again, the Killers and all that, you know, we're not, obviously, but in the right place at the right time, Bjorn again is the perfect fit.
30 years after ABBA won the Eurovision Song Contest, I know that you performed at the Savoy in London for the Radio Times, and I think you played Enter Sandman, which is another great choice, not an ABBA song, obviously. What was that like, and what will you be doing on the 50th anniversary this year?
50th anniversary. Well, I'll be watching on this time, watching the song contest, and you know, I don't know, cheering on England, as I suppose I should. Maybe Australia. I don't know if we've got representation this year.
Is there ever going to be an Avatar show of Bjorn again?
I'd love to. It's something that's crossed my mind before, Steve, to have a really low tech. Yeah, make it really low tech avatar, and I don't quite know how to do it, but some idea might emerge like that. Possibly. I don't know. It'd be fun though, wouldn't it? Maybe there'd be like a low end kind of computer kind of technology that will emerge, and people can do their own avatars and. Yeah, so we might be able to do a stage show based around that.
Well, Rod Steven, thanks for the interview. I really want to say that I do feel that there is such creativity and talent that has gone into Bjorn Again that is sometimes not really focused on. So I want to congratulate you for that. Congratulate you for building something which was must have been a mad idea into a worldwide franchise in a way. You know, I know it's not in every country in the world, but it has been in many countries in the world. And of course, for all the feedback you've got, not only from ABBA, but from the audience. So Rob, congratulations on an amazing success.
Well, thanks, Steve. And it's great talking to you.
Up there is an interview I recommend. Down there is where you can find all the podcast interviews. And here is where you can connect.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a hacer tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.